Kitty. Chapter 39. Kitty had never been inside Mr. Pennyfeather's secret storeroom, but she knew how to operate the mechanism of the door. She trod down the metal lever hidden among the debris of the cellar floor, pushed simultaneously against the bricks above the log pile. The brickwork shifted with a slow, weighted inward swing. There was a sudden chemical smell and a crack opening in the wall. Kitty squeezed through and allowed the door to close behind her. Utter blackness. Kitty stood frozen. Then she stretched out her hands and felt hesitantly on either side, searching for some kind of switch. First, to her utter horror, she came upon something cold and furred. Even as she jerked that hand back, the other closed over a hanging thread. She pulled it. A click, a hum. A soft yellow light came on. The furry object, Kitty was immediately relieved to see, was the hood of an old coat hung up on a peg. Beside it were three dangling satchels. Kitty selected the largest one, placed the strap over her head, and considered the rest of the room. It was a small chamber, ringed from floor to ceiling with rough wooden shelves. Here were the remnants of Mr. Pennyfeather's collection, the magical artifacts that Kitty and the rest of his company had managed to steal over the preceding years. Many objects had already been removed for the Abbey raid, but there were plenty of items remaining. Neat rows of explosive globes and moolah glasses ran side by side with one or two elemental spheres, inferno sticks, silver throwing stars, and other easily manageable weapons. They gleamed brightly in the light. Mr. Pennyfeather appeared to have kept them well polished. Kitty imagined him descending to the cellar and gloating over his collection alone. For some reason, the thought unnerved her. She set to work, packing as many items as she could in her satchel. Next, she came to a rack of daggers, stilettos, and other knives. Some perhaps had magic within them. Others were simply very sharp. She selected two, tucking a silver one into a secret casing on the inside of her right boot, placing the other in her belt. When she stood, her jacket hung down over it, concealing it from view. Another shelf held several dusty glass bottles of varying size, mostly filled with colourless liquid. They had been taken from magicians' houses, but their purpose remained unknown. Kitty gave them a glance, then moved on. A remaining rack of shelves was filled high and low with objects that Mr. Pennyfeather had found no use for. Jewellery, ornaments, robes and vestures, a couple of paintings from Middle Europe, Asian bric-a-brac, brightly coloured shells, and stones with odd whorls and patterns. Stanley or Gladys had observed some kind of magical aura on each one, but the resistance had been unable to activate them. In such cases, Mr. Pennyfeather had simply stored them away. Kitty had intended to ignore these shelves, but as she returned to the secret door, she saw, half hidden at the back, a small, dull disc, heavily covered with cobwebs. Mandrake's scrying glass. Without knowing quite why she did so, Kitty picked up the disc and dropped it, cobwebs and all, into the inside pocket of her jacket. Then she turned to the door, which on this side was worked with a conventional handle. She tugged it open and stepped out into the cellar. The staff was still lying where she had thrown it on the floor that morning. On sudden impulse, Kitty picked it up and carried it back into the secret room. Useless as it was, her friends had died collecting this. The least she could do was stow it away securely. She dropped it in a corner, took a last look around the Resistance's storeroom, and clicked the light pole off. The door creaked mournfully shut behind her as she strode across the cellar towards the stairs. The safe house where Jacob was being held was in a desolate part of East London, half a mile north of the Thames. Kitty knew the area fairly well. It was a region of warehouses and wastelands, many remaining from the aerial bombardments of the Great War. The Resistance had found it a useful area for operating. They had raided several of the warehouses and utilized some of the derelict buildings as temporary hideouts. The magician's presence here was comparatively light, especially after dark. Only a few vigilant spheres tended to pass this way, and those that did could generally be avoided. No doubt this obscurity was exactly why the magician Mandrake had chosen it too. He wished to conduct his interrogation undisturbed. Kitty's plan, such as it was twofold. If possible, she would extricate Jacob from the house, using her weapons and her natural resilience to hold Mandrake and any demons at bay. She would then attempt to spirit him to the docks, and there take passage to the continent. Remaining in London was impractical for a time. If rescue and escape proved impossible, her alternative was less pleasant. She intended to give herself up, providing Jacob was set free. The implications of this were clear, but Kitty did not hesitate. She had lived too long as an enemy of the magicians to have qualms about the consequences now. Keeping to the back roads, she made her way slowly across East London. At 9 o'clock, a familiar wailing drone sounded out from the towers of the city. In response to the Abbey raid 2 nights previously, a curfew was in operation. People passed her on both sides of the street, heads down, hurrying home. Kitty paid them little heed. She had broken more curfews than she could remember. Even so, she sat on a bench in the small deserted park for half an hour or more, waiting for the kerfuffle to die away. It was best there were no witnesses when she drew near to her objective. Mr. Hopkins had not asked her what she planned, and she had not volunteered the information. Other than the address, she wanted nothing more to do with him. His callous indifference at the cafe had appalled her. From now on, she would rely on nobody but herself. 10 o'clock came and went. The moon was out now, high and full above the city. Moving cautiously in plimsolled feet, satchel heavy against her side, Kitty flitted through the deserted streets. In 20 minutes, she had arrived at her destination. A short, dead-end road, a cul-de-sac, with small factory workshops on either side. Pressed into the shadows of the corner, she took stock of the land ahead. The street itself was narrow, lit only by 2 lamps, one a few metres further on from Kitty's corner, the other away near the end of the road. These, and the white moonlight shining down from above, gave the buildings marginal illumination. The workshops were generally low, of 1 or 2 stories. Some of them were boarded up. Others had their doors and windows caved in, gaping black and open. Kitty stood and watched them for a long time, breathing in the night stillness. It was a general rule with her that she never passed open, unknown spaces in the dark. But she could see and hear nothing untoward. All was very quiet. At the end of the road, beyond the second street lamp, was a 3-story building, somewhat higher than the rest. Its ground floor had perhaps once been a garage of some kind. There was a wide opening for vehicles to pass through, now poorly covered with netting. Above this, broad blank windows marked out old offices or private housing. All these windows were black and empty, except for one, where a dim light shone. Kitty did not know which of the buildings in this street was Mandrake's safe house, but this, the only lit window in the entire street, immediately attracted her attention. She kept her eyes fixed on it for a while, but could make out nothing, except possibly some kind of curtain or sheeting drawn across. She was too far away to observe it clearly. The night was cold. Kitty sniffed and wiped her nose on her sleeve. Her heart was beating painfully against her chest, but she ignored its protests. It was time to act. She crossed to the pavement opposite the first street lamp and stole forwards, one hand on the wall, the other resting easily on her satchel. Her eyes were never still. She scanned the road, the silent buildings, the blackened windows up above, the curtained window far ahead. Every few steps she stopped and listened, but the city was silent, closed in upon itself. She moved on. Kitty now drew opposite one of the gaping doorways. She kept her eyes firmly on it as she passed, her spine skin prickling. But nothing stirred. She was close enough now to see that the lit window up ahead was covered with a length of dirty sheeting. Evidently this was not very thick, because she now made out a shadow passing slowly behind. Her brain struggled unsuccessfully to make sense of the image. It was human, that much she could tell, but more than that was impossible to say. She crept a little further down the street. On her immediate left was a broken doorway, the interior a gulf of solid black. Once again Kitty's hackles rose as she tiptoed by. Once again she kept her eye fixed firmly on it. Once again she saw nothing to alarm her. Her nose did twitch at a faint wafting, an animal smell drifting from the deserted house. Cats, perhaps, or one of the pariah dogs that plagued the derelict zones of the great city. Kitty moved on. She drew abreast of the second street lamp, and by its light studied the building at the end of the road. Just inside the lip of the wide garage opening, before the rash of netting, she now saw a narrow door set into the side wall. From this distance it even looked slightly ajar. Too good to be true? Perhaps. Over the years, Kitty had learned to treat anything this easy with extreme caution. She would reconnoitre the whole area before finally committing to that extremely inviting door. She set off once more, and in the next 5 seconds saw two things. The first was up at the lit window. For the briefest of moments, the shadow passed again behind the sheeting, and this time its profile was clear. Her heart gave a jolt. She knew it for certain, then. Jacob was there. The second was at ground level, a little way ahead, on the opposite side of the road. Here, the street lamp threw its light in a rough circle, spilling out across the street and onto the wall of the building behind. This wall was punctured by a narrow window, and further on by an open doorway. And Kitty now noticed, as she edged a little further forwards, that light entering the window could be seen through the doorway, stretching in a flat diagonal across the internal floor. She also noticed, and this made her halt mid-stride, that outlined neatly along one edge of this splinter of light was the silhouette of a man. He was evidently standing pressed flat against the inner wall of the building, just along from the window, because only the very edges of his brow and nose could be discerned in the silhouette. They were rather prominent features. Perhaps they protruded further than their owner had allowed for, just out into the light. Aside from this, he was doing an extremely good job of lying in wait. Scarcely breathing, Kitty backed up against the wall. With a crashing weight, the realization came. She had passed two doorways already. Both had been broken open, and there were at least two more before the street's end. Chances were each had its hidden occupant. Once she had reached the house at the end, the trap would be sprung. But whose trap? Was it Mandrake's? Or, a new and dreadful thought, this, Mr. Hopkins's? Kitty ground her teeth in fury. If she went on, she would be surrounded. If she retreated, she would be leaving Jacob to whatever fate the magicians planned. The first option was possibly suicidal, but the second could not be countenanced at any price. She adjusted the satchel strap so that it hung more easily over her shoulder and flipped the bag open. She took hold of the nearest weapon, an inferno stick, and edged forwards, keeping her eyes fixed on the silhouette in the doorway. It did not move. Kitty kept close to the wall. From a concealed place just ahead of her, stepped a man. His dark grey uniform blended perfectly with the night. Even in full view, his tall and bulky form seemed only half there, a spirit conjured from the shadows. But his voice, harsh and deep, was real enough. "This is the night, police. You are under arrest. Place your bag on the ground and face the wall." Kitty made no answer. She slowly backed away, angling out into the centre of the road, away from the open doorways behind her. The inferno stick lay lightly in her fingers. The policeman made no attempt to follow her. "This is your last chance. Stop where you are and lay your weapons down. If you do not, you will be destroyed." Kitty retreated further. Then a movement to her right, the silhouette in the doorway. From the corner of her eye she saw it shift position. It bent forwards, and as it did so, the features changed. The protuberant nose began to jut forwards alarmingly. The chin swung up to follow it. The bulging brow receded. Pointed ears rose from the top of the skull, flexing and shifting. For an instant, Kitty glimpsed the actual tip of a jet-black muzzle in the illuminated window. Then it had dropped to the floor, out of view. The silhouette had vanished from the doorway. From the room came a snuffling, and the sounds of ripping cloth. Kitty bared her teeth, flicked her eyes back to the policeman in the road. He, too, was altering. His shoulders lurching down and forwards, his clothes peeling away from the long grey bristles erupting along his spine. His eyes shone yellow in the darkness. His teeth snapped angrily as the head descended into shadows. This was enough for Kitty. She turned and fled. Something was pacing with 4 feet at the end of the street, in the dark beyond the lamplight. She saw its burning eyes, and in a gulping mouthful caught its stink. She paused, momentarily uncertain. From a doorway to her right stole another low, dark form. It saw her, snapped its teeth, and gave a dart in her direction. Kitty tossed the stick. It landed on the pavement between the creature's front paws, cracking open and emitting a tall gout of flame. A whimper, a very human squeal. The wolf reared up, front legs pawing like a boxer at the fiery air, and fell back, twisting in retreat. Kitty already had a sphere, she couldn't tell what type, ready in her hand. She ran towards the nearest sealed ground-floor window, threw the sphere against it. An explosion of air almost blew her off her feet. Glass shattered. Bricks fell down into the road. Kitty vaulted through the newly opened space, snagging her hand on a piece of jagged glass. She landed on her feet in the inner room. Outside came a snarling and the scrape of claws on cobbles. Ahead of Kitty, in an otherwise naked room, a narrow flight of stairs rose in the darkness. She ran for them, pressing her wounded hand against her jacket to dull the fresh pain of the cut. On the first step she turned, faced the window. A wolf leaped through the opening, jaws agape. The sphere hit it mid-muzzle. Water exploded through the room, knocking Kitty off her feet against the bottom steps, momentarily blinding her. When she could open her eyes, a flood tide was draining away around her feet, filling the air with little gushing, sucking noises. The wolf was gone. Kitty pelted up the stairs. The upper room had several open windows. Silver moonlight lay unrolled across the floor. Something in the street below howled. Kitty immediately scanned for exits. Found none, cursed wildly. Worse, she could not secure her back. The steps had opened directly onto the upper floor. There was no trap door or other means of shutting off the route. From downstairs came the sound of something heavy splashing into shallow water. Backing away from the opening, Kitty approached the nearest window. It was old and rotten. The wood around the pane hung slewed in its frame. Kitty kicked at it with a boot. Wood and glass fell away into space. Almost before it shattered on the road, she was in the gap, silver light spilling across her face, craning her neck upwards, looking for a handhold. Down in the road below, a dark form wheeled and snapped, heavy feet crunching on glass fragments. She sensed it gazing up at her, willing her to fall. Something bounded up the stairs with such prodigious strength that it almost careered into the opposite wall. Kitty caught sight of a roughened lintel, a foot above the window. She tossed a sphere across the room, reached out and swung herself upwards, boots scrabbling on the window rim, muscles cracking, all the time feeling the stinging pain from the cut in her palm. An explosion below her. Yellow-green plumes of fire jetted out of the window beneath her flailing boots, and for an instant the road was lit as if by a sickly sun. The magical light died. Kitty hung onto the wall, searching for another handhold. She spied one, tested it, found it secure. She began to climb. A little way above was a parapet. Beyond that, perhaps, a flat roof. This was her objective. Lack of food and sleep had sapped her energy. Her arms and legs seemed filled with water. After a couple of minutes, she paused for breath. A scratching and scrabbling below her. A slavering curiously near. Cautiously, fingers digging into the soft bricks, Kitty looked over her shoulder, down along the length of her body, towards the distant moonlit road. Halfway between her and the pavement was a rapidly ascending form. For the purposes of its climb, it had reverted a little from its full wolf guise. Paws had moulded into long clawed fingers. Animal forelegs had reacquired human elbows. Clambering muscles had snapped back into position around the bones. But the face was unchanged. Mouth agape, teeth shining in the silver light, tongue lolling and frothing to the side. Its yellow eyes were on her. This sight almost caused Kitty to lose her grip and tumble away into the void. Instead, she pressed herself close to the bricks, supported her weight with one hand, and eased the other into her satchel. She took hold of the first thing she found, a sphere of some kind, and taking rapid aim, dropped it towards her pursuer. Glinting as it spun, the sphere missed the brindled back by inches. A moment later it hit the pavement, sending out brief jets of flame. The wolf made a gurgling noise deep in its throat. It came on. Biting her lip, Kitty flung herself back into her climb. Ignoring the protests of her body, she clambered frantically upwards, fearing at any moment the clasp of claws around her leg. She could hear the beasts scratching at her heels. The parapet! With a cry, she pulled herself up onto it, stumbled and fell. The satchel was twisted under her. She could not get access to her missiles. She twisted round onto her back. Even as she did so, the wolf's head slowly rose above the edge of the parapet, snuffling avidly at a trace of blood smeared from her hand. Its yellow eyes flicked up, looked straight into hers. Kitty's fingers fumbled in the lining of her boot. She drew out the knife. She struggled to her feet. With a sudden, fluid leap, the wolf plunged over the edge of the parapet and onto the roof, crouching a moment on all fours, head lowered, muscles tensed. It stared up at Kitty out of the corner of its eyes, assessing her strength, debating whether or not to spring. Kitty waved the dagger back and forth, warningly. "See this?" she panted. "It's silver, you know." The wolf looked at her sidelong. Slowly its forelegs rose, its humped back elongated and straightened. Now it was standing on its hind legs like a man, towering over her, swaying back and forth, ready for the attack. Kitty's other hand groped in her satchel for another missile. She knew she didn't have much. The wolf leaped, slashing with its clawed hands, lunging with its red mouth. Kitty ducked, twisted herself round, and thrust upwards with the knife. The wolf emitted a curiously high-pitched noise, swung an arm out and caught Kitty painfully across the shoulder. Claws snagged through the satchel strap. It fell away. Kitty stabbed again. The wolf bounded back out of reach. Kitty likewise stepped away. Her shoulder was throbbing painfully from the cut. The wolf was clasping a small wound in its side. It shook its head sadly at her. It seemed only mildly inconvenienced. They circled each other for a few seconds, lit by the silver moon. Kitty now had barely strength enough to lift the knife. The wolf stretched out a clawed foot and drew the satchel towards it across the roof, well out of Kitty's reach. It gave a low, rumbling chuckle. A small noise behind her. Kitty risked a quick turn of the head. On the other side of the flat roof, tiles rose diagonally to a low, gabled crest. Two wolves stood astride it. As she watched, they began a rapid, skittering descent. Kitty drew the second knife from her belt, but her left hand was weak from the shoulder wound. Her fingers could barely grasp the handle. She wondered, vaguely, if she should throw herself off the edge of the roof. A swift death might be preferable to the wolves' claws. But that was a coward's way out. She would do a little damage before the end. Three wolves advanced on her, two on forelegs, one walking like a man. Kitty pushed her hair back out of her eyes and raised her knives for the last time.